this weekend, French President François Hollande said that France's military operation in Mali has reached its final phase. France has had 4,000 troops in Mali since mid-January and says that it will withdraw from the country this March. Roger Annis is the coordinator of the Canada-Haiti Action Network. He lives in Vancouver and was in Winnipeg to deliver a lecture on the ethics of humanitarian intervention in Mali and in Haiti. And he joins me now in the studio. Welcome, Roger.
Yes, thanks. It's good to be with you.
So as I said, France is reporting that it's going to withdraw from Mali next month. What has changed in the country since France went in January of this year?
Well, there's been a big change in the north of the country over the course of the past couple of years. The Tuareg and other national minorities in the north of Mali had been able to push back an offensive by the Malian army intended to take back the limited gains that they had made in political, cultural, and even economic autonomy. The Mali army was defeated by the Tuareg forces last year, and that prompted the coup d'etat by the Malian military against the Mali government. So France's intervention is really designed just to retake control of the north of the country out of the hands of the national minorities who live in the north. And France has claimed to be planning a quick and rapid withdrawal from the north of Mali and from the rest of the country is really a big deception. They're in there for the long haul they've seized control of the country and they intend now to consolidate that and move forward on that basis.
So in terms of long-term stability, what France has done, will it make the country more stable or has it added to the problems?
In the short term, it may create some stability for the capitalist interests that want to continue to exploit Mali, especially the mining companies that have significant gold mine operations in the south of Mali. And of course, there's a whole regional context to France's intervention that has to do with the uranium mines in neighboring Niger, which are owned by French corporations and are absolutely essential to France's capitalist economy. So there's a broader regional interest that France has had. And so, yeah, that's the other big myth that France has perpetrated is that it made a rapid and quick decision to intervene militarily in the north of Mali on January 9th. In reality, this is something the French government has been talking about for the last year because they were very concerned by the defeat of the Malian army at the hands of the Tuareg National Liberation Forces last year. And then the coup d'etat of March 22nd in Mali last year was a political embarrassment to them and to the United States because of they've been training this Malian military and arming it for years. So to have it conduct a coup against an elected government is an embarrassment. They want to kind of fix that embarrassment and put in place a bit of a sham democratic-looking government in Mali, which would be sort of the partner to the long-term military occupation of the country that is also planned. And, you know, this is how we came into this issue from the standpoint of Haiti solidarity activists. We see so many parallels to what, again, France and the U.S., and with Canada as a partner as well, have been doing in Haiti at least since 2004 and, in fact, well before that.
I want to get to Haiti later in the interview, but I wanted to ask first just about what you've heard about the impact of the French intervention on Mali and specifically on civilians. Have there been a lot of negative effects on the civilian population?
Yeah, they have for sure. Well, the biggest thing about the French intervention is the blow to Mali sovereignty that it represents. France, you know, has now taken kind of a direct control over the country. Yes, there's still a form of national government that exists in Bamako and is supposedly ruling Mali, but it's, you know, France in the driver's seat, and the military in Mali that it's trained and assisted is right there as a junior partner. So this is a big loss to the Malian people to have lost their elected government to the military last year, and now have France come in and even if it's posturing as a savior against the right-wing fundamentalists to consolidate that overthrow. And then there's been serious human rights violations in the north of Mali since the French intervention last month. These have been documented in reports by Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, FIDO, which is an important human rights organization based in France. French media has been reporting this. If you go look closely through French media, they've been reporting the killings of civilians and reprisals by the Malian army as it followed France back into the north of Mali in the footsteps of France. The National Liberation Movement of the Tuareg people, the MNLA is its acronym, the English acronym, has made a formal complaint before the World Court of War Crimes, and they number in the hundreds the innocent civilians that have been killed by the Mali military in reprisal for the defeat that this same military suffered last year. This has been, I would say, almost a completely unreported story in media outside of France and totally in Canada. One other thing that we saw, which as far as I could see was only reported in the daily newspaper in Britain, The Telegraph, has been the what I would call the ethnic cleansing of Timbuktu, an important city that's kind of in the southern part of the north of Mali, a very significant city for the history of humanity, of course. And according to a February 10th report in The Telegraph, the Tuareg and Arab and other minority nationalities that were residing in Timbuktu have been driven out of the city out of fear for their own safety, and they fled to refugee camps in the deserts.
France is leading the operation, but it does have support from other Western countries, including Canada, the U.S., Britain, and Germany. Have you heard if the U.S. has been using drones on the population from its base in Niger?
Not yet. They've received the agreement of the government in Niger to establish drone bases. So what exactly those are intended for, if they actually intend to, you know, to militarily assault from there or simply to do surveillance, I have a feeling it's going to be both. That's now, they're building those bases. They'll be in operation very quickly, and there's been at least 100 U.S. soldiers that we know of that have gone into Niger. The government of Niger is a very sort of pliant government to French and U.S. interests. It governs a country in which the Nigerian people are strongly contest the uranium mines in the north of the country, which are very polluting, very harmful to the environment and to the health of the Nigerian people, and for which the Nigerian people themselves receive next to nothing. I mean, Niger is, like Mali, is one of the poorest countries on earth. And so this is, you know, all of this is what this military intervention is riding roughshod over. And maybe not coincidental that in France itself there's a significant anti-nuclear movement that's been trying to campaign also on behalf of the Nigerian people, who suffer a great deal from the uranium mines in Niger that feed France.
I wanted to ask you a bit more about the Tuareg people in the north of Mali, and you mentioned their National Liberation Movement, the MNLA, and the MNLA has supported the recent French intervention, although, you know, with concerns about the movement of troops from the government. Can you explain sort of your understanding of this, why they do support France coming in?
Yeah, I think they're dealing with an extremely difficult political and military situation in the north of the country. The Tuareg struggle goes back 100 years. It's taken, you know, different forms, and different kinds of demands and objectives have changed and evolved over time. It's a very sort of modern national liberation movement here with very, very clear and defined goals of wanting to see improvements in social conditions, health conditions for the population, economic policies that could bring meaningful improvements for the people, and of course some form of political autonomy. The people themselves, they override these national borders that were essentially drawn by the colonial powers in the process of granting independence to the countries of West Africa during the 1950s and 1960s. So the Tuareg people live, their historic homeland overlaps with five countries in the region: Mali, Niger, Algeria, Libya, and Burkina Faso. So the national borders that were drawn at the time of independence are really quite a barrier to their existence as a people, and this is what they're trying to overcome, is to come to some understanding where they can exist as a people and where these barriers aren't the sharp divide that they are. So they have scored some, they've been prepared to negotiate, and there were at several stages in recent Malian history there were agreements reached between the Tuareg people and the Mali government. Similar processes happen in Niger, where certain measures of autonomy were agreed to and respected by these governments. But those were always sort of attempted to be undone. They were never, the Mali government, the Niger government, were never satisfied in actually implementing policies of autonomy and so on. And so this has been the source of so much of the conflict. And unfortunately for both the Tuareg people and also the Mali people, right-wing Islamic fundamentalists with important support from places like Algeria, Saudi Arabia, other countries in the Gulf states, and with really unclear connections to the United States, France, and the other big powers, have really muscled their way into the north of Mali over the past couple of years, and in particularly last year after the defeat of the Mali military. The fundamentalist forces were able to push aside the MLA and other forces that were, if not secular, were certainly not, you know, fundamentalist in their religious outlook. And so that's been as big a problem for the Tuareg people as it has been for the Malian people. So the Tuareg forces, you know, they're not in a position to stand up militarily to France and fight them. It's just a reality. They've been prepared to, they said, to cooperate with France in the pursuit of a fight against the right-wing fundamentalists. I don't think they're going to get that far with that, and I don't think France is going to provide that much cooperation to them. But, you know, I certainly wouldn't criticize them from abroad. They're dealing with a very difficult situation of being squeezed on the one hand by the Mali army and now this French intervention, and by the other, these fundamentalist forces, you know, from some pretty shadowy locations in North Africa and the Middle East. So, yeah, this is an ongoing thing. But the key demand of the MLA is they don't want the Malian army in the north of Mali because this is an army with a long track record of human rights violations. So France, you know, is to be condemned for, has to bear responsibility for these human rights violations that have occurred since the intervention that I mentioned earlier.
You talked about the resources in the region and the economic importance. Is there, for Canadian firms, is there involvement in this region in terms of resource extraction?
Yes, big time. The overall picture in Africa is that, you know, the events in Mali are really just one snapshot of a process happening all across Africa, which is a, you know, I would call it a recolonization of the continent. The mining firms have been moving into Africa and in huge amounts of investments. I'll give you a number for the Canadian investment alone. Today, Canadian mining investments in all of Africa stand at about $32 billion. There's a half a billion dollars in Mali. This is up from $6 billion for all of Africa, that is, from the year 2005. So in, what, six, 7 years, and five times the amount of Canadian investment has gone in. And there's been very significant shifts in Canadian aid policy, as well as its military involvement together with the United States and France in the militarization of West Africa that has gone along with this penetration of increased mining and other natural resource investments. So, yeah, Canada's into this thing big time, and its foreign policy and its support to France's intervention reflects that.
The United Nations didn't sanction France's military intervention. Do you see a role for the UN in Mali?
I don't think at this stage the UN, and we're talking really about the Security Council, because that's who decides these matters over forms of military occupation, rescue missions, they call them. But no, I don't see anything positive can come out of a UN intervention. We have the long track record now in Haiti of the UN Security Council conducting a wasteful military occupation of Haiti. That's a fundamental violation of the sovereignty of the Haitian people, and worse than that, has done great harm to the Haitian people with the violence, the social conditions such as prostitution that the UN forces bring into any military occupation system situation, and above all the cholera epidemic, criminal negligence on the part of the UN. So no, nothing good would come of that with in the specific case of Mali. France and the U.S. will be seeking a UN Security Council mandate for a continued occupation now in Mali. They were unable to receive that. There were three votes at the UN Security Council in 2012. None of them mandated any kind of foreign military intervention into Mali. And the only mandate of a military character that these resolutions talked about was the third resolution in December, which talked about a military mission by the neighboring African countries, rather undefined that mission and what it would be and so forth. But the reality is that the U.S. And France are going to take charge in this. They will put an African face on this occupation force as much as they can, just as they've done in Haiti with having a Latin American face in the personage of Brazil on the Ministra force in Haiti. But it will be an occupation force that's a violation of the rights of the Malian people, of their political sovereignty, and that really has no interest other than to continue to pursue this exploitation of the natural resources of the country and of the continent with the scale of investment that I talked about.
I want to talk just finally about Haiti, because I know that's your background as a international solidarity work through Canada Haiti Action Network. What do you see as the other parallels between what has happened in Haiti and what's going on in Mali?
I think the other big thing that we'll see itself play out in Mali is that it's been a political embarrassment for the U.S. and France, to some extent for Canada, although Canadians are less aware probably of what's going on in the country. But an embarrassment that the army of Mali that they trained and financed for so many years would overthrow the democratic government. So they don't have when France intervened, for example, last month, not only did they not have a mandate from the UN Security Council to do so, they didn't have a mandate from any Malian authority either, because there is no Malian government to speak of. There's people that are called interim president here, interim prime minister there, and so on. But the real power in Mali is the army. So they will quickly want to put into place an election that will not be a fully democratic election, but will be enough of one that can be sold to international public opinion to say, aha, here we have a Malian government that's been elected. They accept the presence of our military mission in Mali. They want the gold mining to continue in the south of the country and so on. And that's a very similar thing which they did to Haiti. They rapidly moved following the earthquake in Haiti to have an election in which a sham and non-representative government of the Haitian people was put in place. But the important thing was that this was a government that was pliant to U.S., European, and Canadian interests and has served an important function for them. And I think that's the other big parallel that we can see taking shape in Mali. So a two-pronged approach, a military occupation, probably with a Security Council endorsement, preferably for them, but also a very sort of narrowly almost non-democratic electoral process that can come up with a government that can give its acquiescence to all that's taken place.
Well, thank you, Roger, for coming talking to us about this today.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been good to be with you.
I've been speaking with Roger Annis. He's the coordinator of the Canada Haiti Action Network, and there is more information on their website, which is canadahaitiaction.ca. And Roger Annis is also the editor of the blog A Socialist in Canada, and you can read original and recommended articles, including on Mali and Haiti, on that blog, and that's at rogerannis.com. And you're listening to Mud and Water on CKUW 95.9 FM.